Welcome to this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
And I'm Annie Warmke.
You are, and today we're going to talk about planting trees, or we speak for the Lorax.
All right. Yes. That's so touching.
The Lorax speaks for the trees, and we speak for the Lorax.
Dr. Seuss lives.
And today we are joined by Chad Culley. Welcome, Chad.
Hey, how's it going?
And Chad, tell us a little bit about yourself and why you speak for the Lorax.
I like that, speaking for the Lorax instead of the trees.
Mm-hmm. Well, he needs a little help.
So I work for the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden, and I work in horticulture in the nursery area, mostly out in Mason, Ohio at Boyer Farm. And I'm just a lover of plants and collaboration.
Okay, well, in this discussion here today, we hope to get in touch with our inner tree hugger and talk a little bit about those critters. I mean, we hear so much about the trees being the lungs of the world, and they truly are. So
and they help each other.
Mm-hmm. They help each other. Apparently, they talk to each other through their
root system. So amazing!
I think they're talking about me. I'm a little paranoid.
They might be, because you show up with this very destructive thing and cut down their cousins.
Right. Okay. So we're wandering off into left field. So we're talking about planting trees. I mean, maybe we should define the problem. What is the problem? Aren't there enough trees?
No, there's never enough trees.
Never enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, we need We need a billion trees in order to impact climate change. And that's on top of all the ones we should be planting to replace all the ones that they take away. So think about that, Jay.
We need to plant trees everywhere.
That's
anywhere where you're mowing a lawn, there should be trees.
Oh, yeah. Go for it, Chad. Absolutely. I agree. Jay's smiling at me because he loves to mow.
No, I don't. Well, one thing
nobody loves to mow.
One thing that I read somewhere, and maybe you can debunk this or reinforce it, is that actually the greater impact on climate change is not the burning of fossil fuels as much as the deforestation of the planet. Is that a true statement, or am I rambling?
I think there's a lot of truth to it. As I understand it, I believe that refrigerants are one of the, I think that might be the number one.
I think it's manure from livestock. I do believe it's manure from livestock.
Okay, so we're shooting in all directions.
Because they cut down the trees to raise the cattle to feed the people in North America.
Okay, so we can impact this. One thing we can do, you can't solve the world's problems, but you can plant a tree.
Everybody can.
Right. It's a tool. I think it's important to kind of keep it in perspective. If every single person in the world planted a tree right now, my understanding is that it would make a small dent. But I think that there are intangibles that you cannot really quantify. Like, if you and I plant a tree together, well, now we have a story to tell together for the rest of our lives. And then, if we have children or friends that then pass on that story and say maybe that kind of could be in a bigger picture kind of scenario, if you've got an entire community that's planting a forest and they're maintaining it, and that story, lives on too. And that commonwealth that comes from those stories that's born out of that is just, how do you quantify something like that? So I don't know. There's intangibles. I wouldn't say that it's going to solve the problem. But it's definitely a really, really great tool. So
I think it's a great marketing.
At this point.
Yeah, I think it's a great marketing tool, because what it does is it connects people to the soil and it teaches people that plant, and it gives them a story, but it really makes that connection.
Well, one of my favorite stories I heard from someone, I don't remember, was saying when she was a little girl, she was watching her father planting some fruit trees and was asking why. And he said, well, I'm planting these apple trees, and in 10 years, we can have some apples. And she says, well, I don't want to wait 10 years. And he goes, well, you're going to wait 10 years. You may as well have apples at the end of it.
So. Well, when I was a little girl, 7 years old, we brought a nickel to school. And we were able to buy a pine bare-rooted plant. It was very small. And we all went outside, and we planted those. And every year, we would go back and look at those trees. And I loved that tree. I knew exactly which one was mine. And when I grew up, I went back to see if they were still there, and I was gutted because they had cut them down, obviously harvested them. But I never stopped loving that tree or the pine trees that it represented. And I think, you know, as a city person, a little kid in a city, that was powerful to plant something like that. And I just really believe in what Chad's saying, is that it makes this connection that you just can't get any other way. And we need people to have it so they'll care about what happens. It's a political movement.
We need to connect. Yeah, we need to connect to the natural world. We need to be working as a part of the natural world and not seeing ourselves as stewards or masters. We're just a part of it.
Yeah.
It is us, you know? And I think, you know, whatever tool we can use, climate breakdown is real. This is a great tool. It's really fun. So, you know, everybody loves trees and plants. So we should use trees and plants because they're just fun.
One of the things that I just discovered that's an added benefit is I planted a few persimmon trees, which aren't really ripe until pretty much late in the fall, because if you try to eat one before that, you find your face being drawn in, like it's really painful. But they're super delicious, and you can save the seeds and start more trees. But anyway, so there were a lot of them I couldn't reach, and I was very frustrated because they were nice and big and fat this year because it had rained a lot. And then I discovered something really beautiful. Every morning when I went to do chores with my goats, there were lots of birds that came that hadn't been around, and they were eating them, and they did eat all of them. And I was so excited about that because I hadn't thought of that as one of that particular tree's benefits. I do know that everything I try to do is to grow things that I'm feeding everything. I'm feeding us, I'm feeding critters, I'm feeding insects, I'm feeding the soil. And so that was fun. That was super fun.
And you said your dogs go rooting around like a pig looking for truffles,
yes,
right?
They do. They know where the wild persimmons is. And this week it snowed. And they just would go, as soon as we went to do chores, they'd run to the bottom of that tree and start digging with their nose in the snow. They knew exactly where the persimmons were. I couldn't believe it. So they've been eating them too, which is good. That's good. So there's a lot of things.
That's a great point, I think, Annie, because, I mean, if you're a hunter or you're a fisherman, you know, and maybe you're planting something like chestnuts, which, you know, deer love chestnuts.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you want a lot of white-tailed deer on your property, you know, plant a bunch of chestnut trees.
Well, I don't want white-tailed deer because they provided a lot of problems for me, but you're right about that. But I also thought you were going to say that if you're a hunter on your own property, that you might consider having a forest garden, not just to feed the livestock, but there may be food there when you're out hunting that you might be able to ingest to take care of yourself when it's a cold day, like persimmons. The persimmons are still out there this time of the year, so lots of advantages.
Yes.
So
another intangible.
Yeah, there are lots of them, like you're saying. So what do you think you've talked to me about starting currants and elderberries. One of the things that I find, I don't know about currants, I haven't tried to start currants, but I like to start plants by taking what you call a cutting. And what I would do is, you know, cut that cutting into smaller pieces and stick it in the ground at the end of February. And I've started lots of things that way. But do you recommend that versus trying to do it in a greenhouse or in your window at your house?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's an even cheaper way to do it. And so I think, you know, the cheaper, the better. I mean, especially if you're talking about covering a lot of ground. So yeah, absolutely.
So do you have other plants that you think could be started that way, just by taking a stick, as we call it, and putting a couple of the nodules or eyes in the ground? Do you have other plants that would work to do that?
I mean, in terms of plants that just, you know, don't need rooting hormone or don't need any kind of mist set up, blueberries work pretty well that way. Currants, I think I said that. elderflower. Yasta berry is pretty good that way. Let me see here. I can't think of any other ones right off. But
well, I know those willows. The willows, you just stick those sticks in. Right. They practically root before you get them into the ground.
Well, we do have a few different kinds of willow, which is an amazing plant in and of itself. And I highly recommend it to people because depending on what you like, whether it's curly willow or pussy willow, they just have so many uses. Plus, they're fantastic for the environment. And although they might seek out your piping, your sewer system or your water system and break through the pipe and capture the water, but they also can dry up water in it. In a really tough place.
Well, now, Chad, that just reminded me when we were talking about willows, because we see in the early spring and in the late fall, they seem to be one of those plants that the pollinators just flock to. You know, pollinators are a big issue. We're talking about planting trees, but forest gardening and all of these other aspects, how does this then help out the pollinator situation, and which plants should we gravitate towards?
So, you know, willow is definitely, it's one of the earlier pollinator plants. So, yeah, I mean, it's a great one to get out there. Is it going to be a food crop for us? You know, maybe not, but it might encourage a lot of insects to come into your property and then maybe other bigger animals that are going to prey on those insects, even other bigger insects. And so just the more you create biodiversity on your property or in your area, you know, the better it's going to be in terms of the crops that maybe you're trying to grow for money. You know, maybe they're not getting hit as hard by a certain insect because they're, you know, they're being eaten by something else. So,
well, one thing about willows is that they have, while they may not be providing food for humans, they can create a nursery with what they call galls, where the single pollinators will make a nursery, basically. And so you're inviting pollinators into your garden just by having the willows, but they also can be harvested and sold. Like several years, I've sold pussy willow cuts to the florist and gotten $20 a small bundle for them because they're much nicer than the ones they buy from the commercial growers. And they also can be used for fencing and posts to make for vining plants like peas and cucumbers and things. They have a tremendous number of uses. You can go online and look them up.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of selling willow and the like, you know, this is when we talk about forest planting trees on people's lands, often they need to get a return from these things. You know, in 1 second here, I'm going to ask you to respond or come up with some ideas as far as how somebody can plant trees and actually make some money out of it without, you know, clear cutting. But before I get to that, I am going to let everyone know that you are listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke, and we're joined today by Chad Culley of the Cincinnati Zoo, reminding you it is indeed the end of the world as we know it.
And thank God.
Thank God.
And one of the things that we're doing today is talking about replanting forests and in a different kind of way, in a different way of thinking, because it is the end of the world as we know it, and we've got to put something better in its place.
Right. So Annie was just mentioning about planting willow and harvesting some of that. But what are some other ideas, you know, in a sustainable way that you can plant trees but also make a living from that forest as well?
Yeah. So, I mean, Annie brings up a good point with her willow, and she says she's sold the whips off of those in the past. And so I think, you know, that type of approach is really the way to address your own personal needs in terms of food or even economy. You know, that's a way to do it, but also maybe you're growing certain trees on your property for fuel. You're just growing them to burn them. You could pollard them or coppice them, and after too long you could, you know, burn them in your wood stoves and they grow back. I think it's important to kind of look at the system as a whole and try and figure out, you know, what it is that you're trying to do. I definitely think you could easily make you know, a small business from, say, starting Cornus moss, Cornelian cherry, just from seed. You could, you know, grow tons of those things pretty easily. You know, black walnuts, chestnuts. I mean, you could probably do quite a bit from chestnuts, even though the American chestnut will only live for about 10 or 15 years. You can still do a lot with it. But you got to think about every little thing you might be able to do with it. It's not just food. So we can talk about food plants because that's the simple way, or that's the, you know, kind of direction everybody seems to want to go. But, you know, there's other things too. Like, you might be able to trade some of your nursery plants to somebody that's keeping goats and get some milk or something like that. So I think it's important to look at all the available resources on your property. Every single plant on your property is going to do something. Even, say, white pine, the roots of that can be used to tie up baskets. Milkweeds are fiber plants. I mean, you just got to look at every plant, get familiar with all the plants on your property and figure out what their uses are. And from there, you can start to make plans.
Well, one of the things that I totally agree with that, because a lot of things that I do with plants that people would just cut down, like I like certain kinds of weeds, and they have a purpose. They have several purposes. Some of them are companion plants, so they help other plants that you might grow for food to do better. They capture nitrogen into the soil, or they push certain insects away, deter them. But then the other thing is, I like to dry them. And I think about, okay, how's that plant going to dry? And then I have sold some of those things. But they're coming, the plant's coming out of the forest. And Jay's pointing out to me, am I talking about forest or not? But so these things have come out of the forest. Some of them are on the edge of the forest. And some of them have actually grown in pasture. But I'm drying them. And then I teach people how to use them to make different kind of holiday gifts and things to hang on the wall or a wreath or whatever. And that's really super fun. But again, it's not feeding anybody, although the plants have already bloomed and they've done what they need to do to set their seed, and then I'm drying them. I just think we have to be creative and stop thinking that every plant is a mono plant that has one purpose, and not thinking of it, how does it contribute to the microbes in the soil? How does it contribute to the rest of the environment? How does it feed insects and humans and critters and whatever else, or doesn't? And that's not how we've thought about it. So that's what I think replanting the forest is about, is just rethinking everything and saying, let's go back to how our ancestors looked at this. And how
I think one of the things we often forget about, because we're walking over top of it all the time, is the soil. And I think that's, you know, for me, that was my impetus to get interested in this stuff, was considering, hey, what are we doing to all this soil? Where is it going when it rains really hard? Now that we're getting, you know, much harder rains than we used to get, you know, and we've got a field full of corn that's, you know, recently been harvested, it's not covered maybe, or soy, and a lot of that soil just runs off into the gullies, and eventually makes it, you know, to the rivers, and by that time it's too late. But, you know, with this style of farming, you could maybe subsist on your own property, and you could, you know, keep the soil where it belongs, which, you know, keeps the water cleaner too.
Well, also just trying to get more microbes in there so it does do what it's supposed to do, versus allowing Tree of Heaven to be happy versus a wonderful black walnut tree. Well, one of the things that I think we touched on this earlier, but I would like to talk a little bit more about, because I think you have a lot of good ideas about this, Chad, is ways to get people to care. So part of the problem we have today is that kids don't really get access. They don't get to touch soil, and they don't get to really be connected to nature and the natural world. And one of the things that we talked about before was that there are things that people do annually with plants that we don't really think that much about, but that could make those kinds of connections. Like, you know, growing things that make jam and jelly and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So how do you motivate people to care about the forest, Chad?
Well, you have to use the plants. I mean, that's just the simplest way to say it is, you know, you got to have relationships with these plants. And so that means you need to use them. And so if you're using them to make baskets, you know, you could use juncus to make baskets or milkweeds or whatever. But, you know, that moment that you're having, that you're sharing with that plant, you know, that's exciting. It's interesting. And then sharing that with other people somehow is also a lot of fun. I think, you know, that's really what I would like to encourage with, you know, with people, is just to kind of get out there and talk about plants, share your knowledge about plants, tell stories. Steve Foltz, the director of horticulture at the Cincinnati Zoo, likes to talk about how when he brings kids through the Cincinnati Zoo, he likes to pull a leaf off of a big leaf magnolia and hand it to the kids, because the leaf is just, it's huge. And it's kind of hilarious. It's kind of a funny looking, I mean, it's massive. It looks like something from a cartoon. And they hand it to the kids, and the kids always, he said, I never fail to get giggles and laughs and screams from these little kids. They're so excited about this, just this leaf, you know? So, I mean, it's just, you know, sharing a relationship with these plants, having a reciprocal relationship with them. And, you know, if you're using these plants for something at home, maybe you're making ferments, or, you know, you're making clothing, whatever the case may be, fuel even, you're gonna want to take care of that plant. You're gonna want to grow more of them. And so I think using them it's important. I think that's where the kind of a lot of, you know, frustration about land use kind of comes down to that often, because people are getting out there and using land and, you know, for different things. And a lot of times the people that are using the land are the people that are taking care of it the best. So, you know, I think just get out there, figure out how to use plants and talk about it, have fun with it.
Well, I was thinking about that, because I'm somebody who's relatively disconnected from nature my entire life. And since we've been living at Blue Rock Station and we heat with wood, I find that I'm much more aware of the trees in our woodlands sort of over time, looking at them, saying, oh, that tree's dying. That's going to be something I'm going to cut down in maybe 2 years, you know, start to keep my eye on it. So that's kind of interesting to me, because I find, because I am utilizing that resource, I am more aware of it and perhaps taking care of the woodlands a little bit better, because now it's something I depend upon.
Right. I mean, you have to really understand that the tradition that we come out of in industrial agriculture, that really kind of informed quite a bit what, you know, how we feel and think about land use. You know, when we started plowing and, you know, doing all this row cropping, and, you know, it was really destructive. But also, you know, the mantra back then was that the rain follows the plow. So this, you know, the plow, the thing that was doing all the damage. And it's not to say that plowing is always the worst thing. There are certainly some cases where you might need to plow.
It's pretty close, though. Pretty darn close.
Yeah, but I mean,
not good.
You know, you're holding this item up as the, you know, the one thing that you need to do to really, you know, take care of the land is plow. I think a lot of times now we talk about chemicals in the same way. And, you know, chemicals have their place too. We should not discount them completely, but, you know, we need to be really careful about how we use things like the plow or chemicals. Humans have an enormous capacity to do, I don't know, what you might call good, and maintain the land and create relationships with it, but we also have a really strong capacity for destruction too. So we have to be careful that we're, you know, understanding what we're capable of.
Yeah, because we don't want to, and we're little hedonists, and then we become big hedonists. So that's my opinion. But one thing I wanted to say when we get ready to wrap up here, but it seems to me that the best way to start with this is we need to be able to know what plants we have available. And maybe we don't have any plants. So if we were to start with a plant that we care about, like or that we know, so maybe pussy willows, or maybe it's a plant that you would grow to get a berry off of or something. If we start with that plant and really learn about it, so there are a lot of ways to do that. And the ways that I know of, and I'd like you to add to that, Chad, but would be there are lots of classes in communities that on a variety of levels. So some might be looking more traditional and using chemicals, like Master Gardeners program. Almost every county has one of those through their extension office, or maybe YouTube videos. There's tons and tons of things out there that would show you, and you could be very specific to the plant that you're interested in. Do you have other?
I think what you just said, Annie, is a really, it's just a fantastic place to start. Is just find one plant that you like, try to grow it, try to learn about its relationships with its world, and try to learn about your relationship and our relationship to that plant. That's a great place to get started. As far as getting out there and learning about how to ID plants, learning, you know, what it is that you like, just wherever you can find a plant walk, local plant, local parks of all different types. There's going to be somebody that probably leads a plant walk every so often. Local community colleges are going to have woody ID plant classes, or even herbaceous ID plant classes that are, you know, probably decently affordable. Some local nurseries or farms might even have the occasional tour, and you can learn a lot from those people that are leading those tours. So I'd say the best way to do it is to just get out there with somebody that knows something about plants. Find those people, walk with them as much as you can, and just listen.
Okay, well, thank you, Chad. And you have been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. We want to thank you, Chad Cully, for joining us from the Cincinnati Zoo. And we want to thank our Emmy Award-winning producer, Adam Rich. And we want to thank you for spending just a few minutes with us. And as your grandmother hopefully told you, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is...
play nice with others, clean up your own mess, and grow some trees.
Grow trees and vegetables.
Yes.
Till next time. Bye-bye.
Mother Earth will sing, and her children will be healed. Come out, see the light of glory blossom in the night. Know the skies are dancing in twilight. Soon we'll be together, all will be revealed. Mother Earth will sing, and her children.
You can find more information on living sustainably in our unsustainable world at BlueRockStation.com. Yeah!